Well, greetings once again to everyone. It is Thursday, and that means that it's time for another Access to Access webinar here at TFMR. We do these every Thursday, at least we try to do these every Thursday, and we bring in a precious metal specialist from around the world and do these interviews in the GoToWebinar format so that you can listen along and ask questions of the guest in real time. And today's guest is one of our favorites. He is the original founder of Gold Money. He's an author, analyst, really one of the, I guess we'll call you a maven, James, in the precious metals sector. His latest book came out last year. It's called The Money Bubble. He co-wrote that with John Rubino, and it's a must read for everyone. And it's just a real treat and a pleasure to have James on with us here in 8A. James, thanks. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's always great to be with you.
Again, we do this in this format of GoToWebinar, so everybody that's listening can type in questions for James. There's a tab on your GoToWebinar control panel that you click for questions. You type in the question, it comes to me, and I relay it to James. So if there's anything you'd like to ask him, this is your big chance. We'll get to all the questions in due time. To kick things off, though, I've got a couple things that I'd like to ask you, James, and I've got one question that was emailed in. But gosh, let's just dive right in. It's been a rather interesting 2 weeks. Go back to the end of the first week of July, and everything looked hunky-dory. The yen was crashing. Interest rates were at record lows around the globe, and gold was up around 1370 or 80, and now the last 10 days have seen a reversal in all of that. I would imagine you've got some thoughts of what we've seen here in July.
Yeah, you know, what we've seen over the last couple of weeks is just repeated from dozens and dozens of times over the past several years. Once the open interest on the COMEX exchange, gets way up there from the, the price manipulators shorting paper, eventually the longs run out of buying power and momentum, and some traders start moving over to the short side, and you see a correction, and that's what we've had over the last couple weeks. And I like the fact that we're getting a good bounce here today from lows. When you look at it from a technical analysis point of view, it's hard to make a case that you're going to buy here because the charts look sort of awful. But you have to keep in mind, it's not only us that are looking at charts, but the price manipulators are looking at the charts as well. And one of the things that you have that's unique in the commodities industry, the managed account industry for commodities, is a lot of money is directed by what's called black box trading models. In other words, you don't know what the trading model is from the outside. The manager uses a mathematical formula as to when to buy or sell. And the interesting thing is that all of these are trend following to a large extent. So if the trend is up, the model is long. If the trend is short, the model, the trader then goes short, again following the model. And it doesn't take rocket science to reverse engineer what these models are doing at any moment in time. Because again, it's basically, is the trend up or is the trend down? So they tend to be geared on short-term moving averages as a typical rule. So you can see over the last couple of days, all of those big trading models have now moved from the long position to a short position, and the price manipulators have covered their shorts that they sold up at 1360, 70, and 1380, and now they're getting ready to, run the whole cycle again. So I'm quite encouraged by what the metals have done here over the past couple of days. And, with the weekend coming up, I'm not surprised to see, gold and silver bouncing here. But, let's forget about the short-term stuff for a moment, Craig. Long-term, we've had some major developments this year. And to me, the most significant one is that the five-year downtrend in silver has been broken to the upside. And that, to me, is quite significant. It suggests that, along with a bunch of other things I'm saying, the precious metals are going to continue plowing higher as we move toward the end of the year.
You mentioned open interest, James. Isn't it astonishing that this doesn't seem to bother anyone? The amount of open interest in COMEX silver versus global mine supply is now 125%. In gold, it's about 65%. In copper, it's only 15%. Wouldn't you think that would alarm someone?
Yeah, it's really quite crazy. If you saw 125% open interest to soybean production or grain production, the CFTC would be, jumping up and down and on the backs of the people who are short, because you can't deliver if there's more shorts than there is grain being produced. But you don't see that in the precious metals, and it's just further evidence that the government, the CFTC, just allow the manipulation of the precious metals to occur without doing anything about it in terms of the rules and regulations.
Yeah, and to me that's emblematic of why we've got this historically just crazy gold-silver ratio up 65, 70, 75 to 1, because all of that extra open interest, the way that we price physical metal off of this paper derivative trading, allows for that kind of a distortion. But the paper derivative trading does need some physical metal behind it. That's what we're all hoping for in the end, is that the physical metal causes a breakdown. What are, you're very well connected, obviously, in the gold industry and to the markets in London. Is there any insight you can add here in the middle part of 2016 as to how the physical trade appears, how the vaults seem to be in London?
Yeah, metal still remains very tight. We've had a little bit change in the pattern of the flows to where the metal is moving. You still have a lot of metal moving up to Asia, but there's also a lot of metal now moving to Europe. So it's a question, where's all of the stuff coming from? And obviously it's coming from central bank vaults. I think there's been a lot of dishoarding from central bank vaults. We've seen some of it coming out of the Federal Reserve. There have been reports, except last month there was none, supposedly, but they've been basically every month this year there's been some metal moving out of the Federal Reserve vaults from the states moving back over to Europe. But metal is tight, and you see it in the way that's trading. August futures and spot was in backwardation, when we were at the lows yesterday. It's basically flat now. So you still see, very, very tight market conditions for metal. And, generally, I think that people are starting to understand that with all of the uncertainty we have in the world, the financial uncertainty, that you really want to own physical metal. And, forget about playing around with the paper market, because with paper, you don't own the real thing. The only way you own the real thing is if you buy it and store it yourself, or if you buy it and you store it with someone like, my company, Gold Money, so that you actually have the real thing.
Yep. And James, one last question before we get to the questions in the queue. You have been a voice of reason in regards to these ETFs, the gold ETFs, now for the 10 years that they've been around. And so far this year, allegedly, the ETFs in gold have increased what they call their inventory by nearly 600 metric tons, about half of that going into the GLD alone. 600 metric tons is 20% of global mine supply, allegedly, if they're actually getting their hands on it. Given your experience and the fact that you've been on this, like I said, for as long as these things have been around, what are the chances they actually have that metal? How do they say that they can acquire it, or how do they actually show that they own it? How does that whole process even work, James?
Yeah, even if the metal is there, and I have serious doubts as to whether it is, you don't own metal. You own shares in a fund. It's not like owning physical metal. You have when you own physical metal, you don't have counterparty risk. When you have shares in a fund, you do have counterparty risk, and that even assumes that the metal is there in the first place. But all you have to do, Craig, is read the prospectus for GLD or any of them. And basically what the purpose of the fund is not to own physical metal. It says in the prospectus the purpose of the fund is to give investors a vehicle that tracks the gold price. And that's very, very different objective. So really it's an ETF is for traders. It's not for people who want to own gold because of gold's monetary propositions. If you're a trader and you want to try to profit from fluctuations in the gold price, either being long or being short, you can own ETFs, you can own futures contracts, you can own options. But my recommendation is leave that to the professional traders. What we as individuals want to do is own gold because it's money, and it's money outside the banking system, and it's only money outside the banking system when you own physical gold. So unless you're a trader, stay away from the ETFs and just go for the physical product. And this is also true for silver. I have to shake my head sometimes when I see the silver ETF going up by tons and tons from one day to the next. How does this tons of silver just miraculously appear out of nowhere when conditions are so tight and premiums on physical are so high? It just makes me laugh when I see these things.
Is it just a promise to future deliver from a bullion bank, or is it just a charade, just basically a scam saying, we had to increase the amount of shares outstanding, so we're just going to journal book entry, make it look like we added 18 tons today?
Yeah, that's it. It basically, if you've read any monetary history about fractional reserve banking, as has been practiced, over hundreds of years, the banks never keep all of the metal that they say they have. And the ETFs are just a variation of fractional reserve banking, in my view. So when you see the silver ETF going up by a few dozen tons in one day, they'll issue the shares and then they'll say, okay, well, we'll try to get some silver metal, or we'll buy a contract from so-and-so and accept that counterparty risk that maybe they're going to deliver metal to us 6 months down the road when market conditions are more easy to get our hands on that size amount of physical metal. You just look at it as a fractional reserve system, just like banking was, in my mind. So again, if you're an investor looking for safety to avoid counterparty risk, want gold or silver because of their money, own the physical, stay away from the ETFs. Just keep the ETFs if you're a professional trader.
Yeah.
Otherwise, view it the same way you would a futures contract or an option on gold or an option on silver.
Yeah, and I guess in the end, James, why would it matter to the custodian, HSBC, because the only entities that can liquidate shares for physical metal are the authorized participants, which are all the bullion banks, and they're not going to risk the system by coming and raiding 100 metric tons out of it, of gold that's not there. So what risk do they have anyway?
Yeah, exactly. And the other day I was discussing this with some friends of mine, and they said, well, why would these banks get involved in fraud? And my point was that there is no fraud because the prospectus basically says what they're required to do is track the gold price or track the silver price. It doesn't say that they're fully backed by precious metals when you read through all of the loopholes and stuff in the prospectus. So there is no fraud. The fraud comes from the media who broadcast these things as fully backed by precious metals when they're not. Yeah. The funds have a clearly stated objective of tracking the price of precious metals, not being backed by precious metals. And there's so many loopholes in there, there's no fraud.
Yeah, excellent point. All right, I've got one question that was emailed to me. We might as well just move into that. And then I've got a stack of questions already building up in the queue. And again, this is your opportunity to ask Mr. Turk anything you'd like here in real time. So please click the questions tab and type it in. But before we get there, this email question comes from someone who couldn't join us today. His name is Gabe. Gabe, like most of us here at TF Metals Report, has been watching paper gold trade in tandem and influenced by the dollar yen, changes to the yen, for years, actually. We've been tracking it here for a couple of years now. And that's the basis of Gabe's question. He says, Mr. Turk, regardless of whether or not the Bank of Japan decides to conduct more easing at their meeting on the 29th of July, or whether they just continue to jawbone the possibility of doing it sometime later on this year in the hopes of propping up the dollar yen, how much longer do you think Mr. Kuroda can maintain the illusion of a failed policy in the face of a crumbling economic reality? That said, do you think precious metals prices will raid around these suppressed prices and dollar strength to find out?
Yeah, that's a really good question. A couple of weeks ago when the yen got down to 100, I was discussing this with some friends of mine, and I was saying, either my 50 years of experience in financial markets counts for nothing anymore, or the yen is very, very overvalued at 100 yen to the dollar. And, from that specific day, we've actually bounced back. Now we're up at 105, and the correlation with the metals of more or less staying in place, because the metals are also been bouncing with the yen as the yen weakens. I guess the way to answer this question is the way I answered it with my friends the other day, is that when you're in a bubble, it's very easy to lose sight of reality and the way things work, because everybody's saying and doing the crazy things. So you saw the yen going from 120 yen to the dollar, in October to 100 yen to the dollar in July, during a period when the Bank of Japan is creating money left and right. But I guess at the end of the day, you have to look at the monetary base of the U.S. versus the monetary base of Japan, and the monetary base of Japan is literally exploding. So I think you're going to see precious metal prices continue to rise in yen terms, and the yen's going to weaken against the dollar. From a big picture perspective, I've been saying that the four major world currencies, the dollar, the euro, the pound, and the yen, it's sort of a horse race as to which one was going to be the first one across the line. In other words, totally destroy the currency. And from time to time, one horse is leading or another horse is leading. Well, right now the yen is leading this race that nobody wants to win. The destruction of the currency because of the policies that they're following. And I think the fact that the yen had turned here is again one of these little pieces of anecdotal evidence that I'm suggesting that yes, we're probably getting to the stage where you're going to see much more inflation as we move toward the end of the year. That's why the stock market is going up, in my view, because when you own shares in a company that's involved in tangible assets, being at a mining company, an oil company, or an agricultural company, you're better off than owning a T-bond or a T-bill or even a bank deposit where you're not earning any interest, to offset the risks of inflation. So my expectation is that currencies are going to be destroyed because governments cannot raise interest rates to pay a fair rate of interest. That's the bottom line thing. They can't do what Volcker did 30 years ago. That all they could do is try to keep interest rates low, continue to try to pump up the system. But the result's going to be they're going to destroy the currencies, and you're going to see precious metals and stock markets soar. The monetary base in Japan is growing much more rapidly than the monetary base in the U.S., and as a consequence, I think you're going to see Japan being the first currency to really move toward a hyperinflationary environment. And I think we're very, very close. And by close, I'm talking about if not this year, then next year.
Well, and as you wrote in the money bubble, these currencies are all in a bubble. And this move toward negative interest rates in places where the currencies are rapidly devaluing just is a double whammy that augurs for physical gold. And it's the physical gold that's removed from the system that eventually breaks the paper system. Let's hope.
Absolutely right.
All right, the next questions, I've got two of them, come from Ted. So let me hit you with the first one, and then we'll go with the second one. Hi, James. What are your thoughts regarding streaming royalty companies like a Sandstorm Gold? And the reason he asks is that in Q1, that company has a $700 million market cap, which meant greater operational income and net income than others like First Majestic.
Yeah, I like the royalty companies, Sandstorm, Royal Gold, Franco-Nevada, which of course is the very first one of these. These basically have streams coming in precious metals. So you have an optionality in those companies that you don't get, that perhaps even a little bit greater than they would be in the mining companies, because you don't have the capital requirement and capital investment in these streaming companies. What I don't like are the companies that sell production to the streaming companies, because they're giving up a lot of the gold price in exchange for receiving dollars today. And that's a losing bet, just like hedging gold production is a losing bet. In an inflationary environment, and an environment where inflation is going to become even greater, you should expect to see a rising cost inflation in terms of producing in the mines, higher labor costs, higher capital costs, higher oil costs. Everything will be going up, and as a consequence, hedging, selling your revenue to a royalty company from a mining company's perspective is something that I do not favor. So I would stay away from those mining companies that hedge or sell to the royalty companies. But I like the royalty companies because they're on the winning side of that trade.
Yeah, yeah. All right, this follow-up question from Ted then is in regards to the ETFs that are out there. We know what GLD and SLV are. I mean, they're trading vehicles. Maybe you want to buy a call or something if you're going to gamble. What is your opinion as a more longer-term hold of Eric Sprott's funds, specifically the PHYS and the PSLV?
Yeah, they're good. They, you know, prove that they actually have the physical metal there. I don't really consider them as ETFs. I consider them to be, you know, metal funds. So yeah, if, the Sprott funds are good alternatives. If you want to own metal in the name of a share, rather than owning metal directly.
Yeah.
And that may be necessary in some cases, for example, because I know some pension plans in companies don't allow you to own metal directly. So the next best alternative would be to own for your, you know, in your pension plan shares of one of the Sprott funds.
Yeah. And again, gets it, that's actual metal that they've got to take delivery of, and it gets it out of the hands of the banks. Which is
exactly, and some of those Sprott funds, they allow you to take physical delivery of the against the shares that you own. But you know, again, if you're doing it in a pension fund, you're not going to take the physical delivery. But it at least gives you the assurances that the metal is there, which is what you don't get in GLD and some of the ETFs.
Yeah, yeah. All right, moving on. I have a specific question to gold money and Bitgold in combination. This comes from John. Just wondering if you can explain the difference between gold money and Bitgold, and why are vaulting costs more in gold money than in Bitgold, as he has accounts for both?
Yeah, well, Bitgold, you can only store up to 2,500 grams. Once you go over that limit, then you are going to incur vaulting costs. And the reason why Bitgold does that is they try to encourage gold to be used as a form of currency. So for smaller amounts, they just don't bother to, you know, charge the storage fees. But we did announce recently, or Gold Money's announced recently, that both Bitgold and Gold Money are going to be unified. And what we're doing is we're dividing Gold Money into three different groupings, and these are more formally going to be announced in the not-too-distant future, that you have Gold Money Wealth, which is the original Gold Money, mm-hmm. and then you have Gold Money Personal, which is Bitgold, then you have Gold Money Business, which is the business applications, you know, getting paid in gold and things of that nature for companies. That was just announced a month or a couple of months ago. So this is all going to be unified. Bitgold will still be there in the sense that the technology that's going to be driving gold money is the original Bitgold technology, which is very safe, secure, efficient, etc. And that's going to drive both the original gold money as well as the Bitgold business, but under this unified brand.
Fair enough. It sounds great to me. A couple more questions in queue, James, and then we'll begin to wrap up. And again, if anybody wants to add another question, please type it in now to your questions tab on your GoToWebinar control panel. Question from Bruno, and this gets back to the ETFs, and just wants your opinion on this one. The ZKB. Gold fund in Switzerland, kind of similar in structure to Sprott's, I guess. Do you know anything about that one?
You know, I've heard of it, but I've not really looked into it. I understand that it's supposedly backed by metal like a Sprott fund, but I can't verify that because I've never researched it. So I'm going to have to not answer that.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. And last question I have pending, at least at this moment, comes from a guy named Mark. And I know this is a question he's got an interest in, so I'd be interested to hear your opinion. He says, Mr. Turk, should precious metal miners start banking their net physical production? I guess meaning not selling it right away, instead of selling their doré bars for fiat currency.
Yeah, you know, if we can get the miners to recognize that what they're producing is money, the ideal thing would be for them to sit on some of their gold for a period of time and use it when it's advantageous for them to do so. You know, it's interesting in the Bitgold side of gold money where the payments are possible. What we're seeing is people will buy gold and then they will use it if they see the gold price going up. They'll load it onto their debit card or they'll use it as a payment mechanism to make a payment. And what we're hopeful of is that the mining companies will ultimately do that as well, and recognize that, you know, gold is money and start using gold as a form of currency. We now have that capability within the Bitgold business side of the business, that companies can open a business account, do payrolls in gold and things of that nature. So yeah, it's, I think, an educational process, but I think it's going to happen as people start to understand more and more that not only is gold a better currency, it's much less costly and more efficient it serves the industry by using gold in a way that it hasn't been used before, and that's going to increase the demand for gold, will benefit the mining companies.
Yep. And before we get to the final four, just as we wrap up, I do want to give my endorsement of what you guys are doing, because anything that removes physical gold and gets it out of the hands of these darn bullion banks and makes it that much more difficult for them to continue to manipulate and manage the price through their paper markets, I mean, I'm all in favor of. Can you just tell everybody a little bit, even sell BitGold a little bit. Tell them about the incredible rise of customers you've already had, the growth of the company, and just kind of go back over some of those initiatives that you're working on to grow it on and grow it even faster.
Yeah, you know, Gold Money got started in 2001, which is what, you know, I had launched, and then we did the transaction with BitGold just a year ago. It's only been a year since Gold Money and BitGold have merged, and a lot has happened in that past year. We've got over 1 million users worldwide. And when you look at some of the way that BitGold is being used, it's being used as an alternative to a bank account. People in countries like Argentina, or you know, where there's currency disruptions, they'll use their BitGold account as a payment mechanism and also as a savings mechanism, because it doesn't pay to save national currencies anymore when you have zero interest rates. That doesn't offset the risks of saving those national currencies. So yeah, it's growing quite rapidly, and you know, Gold Money is now listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange. You know, BitGold had been listed on the Toronto Venture Exchange, and then it was upgraded, graduated to the main board in Toronto just a couple of months ago. So yeah, there's been a lot of progress. We've announced from time to time, you know, new developments and new things, and you're going to continue to see more products being rolled out, products and services being rolled out in the months ahead.
A million new customers. Have you done the math? Has anybody there done the math? I mean, you know how many tons of gold that relates to? I mean, how many ounces and then tons that is in just 1 year alone?
I lost you, Craig. I don't know if you can hear me, but I can't hear you.
You're back. You're back. My follow-up question just was, with over a million new customers, can you readily convert how many grams that is to ounces and how many ounces that is to metric tons in just 1 year alone?
No, I don't know. I don't have the numbers at hand, but we have been growing. BitGold itself has got over a ton of gold, and that's just within the past year. So I think it's like $48 million is just within BitGold.
Wonderful. And again, one ton moved out of the hands of the bankers, you know, when they're leveraging that stuff 50 to 100 times, that's like 50 or 100 tons taken out of their hands.
Yeah, and overall, between, you know, what BitGold has and what Gold Money has in terms of looking at the overall company, we're talking about 1.75 billion of precious metals.
Larry just texted in real quick. How do I get BitGold? I imagine you just go to the BitGold.com site and sign up, right?
Yeah, it's very easy to do. It's easy. You know, it's like opening an Uber account or anything like that. Things can be uploaded just to meet our regulatory requirements. You can do it within just a couple of minutes. BitGold.com or GoldBunny.com.
And John's got a neat point. He says, tell James that I use a cash back credit card that pays me 1% back on all my purchases, which offsets the 1% cost to purchase. How about that?
That's a good deal. Yeah. If you can get those kinds of cash back cards, it's a good way to, you know, lower your cost of purchases, and I recommend them.
And can I move Bitcoin into BitGold yet?
You can sell your Bitcoin and buy gold through BitGold, but you can't go the other way. Because of regulatory reasons.
Fair enough. James, I've got to tell you, it's been fantastic. I know we battled some technology issues, but hey, the technology is the fact that we can be doing this is good enough for me. And I know it's been a real treat for everybody here to hear directly from you. We've got a tradition here, though, as we wrap these things up, we do what we call the final four. Just four kind of quick questions, fun questions that you can usually answer in one sentence or a couple of words. So if you're ready, on the way out, can I hit you with them?
Yep, fire away.
Okay. What is the next move by the FOMC in the U.S., a rate hike or more QE?
More QE. They can't afford to raise interest rates. They're not going to. They can't do what Volcker did. So consequently, rather than saving the dollar, they're going to let the dollar get destroyed. So you're going to see more QE.
Fair enough. That's only a good fundamental as well for gold. All right. Now, again, no one's going to hold you to this. This is just your opinion. Will there be a delivery default in gold? Just somewhere, not in the COMEX, but just somewhere, an unallocated account, a pooled account someplace. Will there be a delivery default in 2016?
I don't know about 2016, but there will be before this is over. And the reason is that if you go back and look at monetary history, it's a delivery default that causes financial crises. You know, up the 1932 crisis was a consequence of people wanting to move out of paper and moving into physical gold. And it's out of everybody's living memory today. We see financial crises and financial panics, but we're going to have another financial crisis like the 32 one where people will move out of paper into gold. Because there's so much more paper out there, paper promises to deliver gold, some of those promises are going to be broken. It's like musical chairs. There are not enough chairs to suit all of the players. So, yeah, there will be a default. My guess, though, Craig, it's probably 2017, not 2016.
Fair enough. You know, it's like the end of the London gold pool or the closing of the gold window, you know, 3 years later. That's your recent delivery default.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit different than back then because U.S. citizens couldn't hold gold. Mm-hmm. You know, now they can. So,
and you didn't have all this paper floating around and all the extra claims to people that think they own gold, like you said, that musical chairs game.
Yeah, and the claims today are probably 10 times greater relatively than what they were back in the 1960s. All right. So it's going to be a big bust up when it finally happens.
Can't wait. All right, question number three. Who is the next president of the United States 6 months from now?
Well, I think it's going to be Trump. Had Sanders won the nomination, I think it would have been a close race, but I think Trump's going to walk away with it because of the dissatisfaction with the way things have been going in terms of the government, direction of the country, the economy, and stuff like that. So I think Trump's going to walk away with it.
I'm trending toward going along that road myself. And finally, the Olympics begin in a couple of weeks, the Summer Olympics. What is your favorite Olympic event to watch?
Oh, I see. Probably golf. I'm intrigued to see how that goes this year, even though some of the top players aren't going to be down there in Rio.
Hey, cover yourself and off like all the rest of us do in the summertime and go out and play, for God's sake.
That's what I'm going to be doing a little bit later today, actually.
Sounds good to me, my friend. All right. Hey, James, again, thank you so much, one, for this, but just thanks for all you do. I mean, we wouldn't be none of us would be in the position where we are if it weren't for all of your diligent efforts for the last 15, 20 years and beyond. So thanks for all you do and all you've done. And it's always a pleasure to visit with you. And hopefully we can do so again soon.
Yeah, I'd love to do it. Let's do it from when I'm back home in London now, because the technology there, the internet connection is much better than it is here in New Hampshire, as we've just found out.
We'll do that again soon. James, thank you. And thanks everybody for listening. We'll have another one of these 8 A's soon. Have a great rest of your day.